Mini episode 1717 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1717. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we have a real thrill here today, because we have one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries. We minted him as such in the last couple of years, and it was well-deserved. I always refer to him as fitness and pop culture expert John Baystow. And, of course, you could put any number of descriptives on this gentleman, but we've covered a number of awards shows for years, but as we've talked about off-air, the one that we've never missed, I think, is the Oscars going back to 2014, a solid decade of going through this year. And the snarky comments on Rick going through, breaking down the Oscars year after year. It's got to be a part of everybody's entertainment industry favorite things here as far as recaps go, John. And we're giving the people what they want for a solid decade, and I can't thank you enough for being here.
FDH dignitary, so there you go. I have absolutely no conception of time. Time is a very fluid concept to me. But so I had to ask in the beginning how long we've been doing this, and when you said wow, since 2014, I'm like, yeah, 10 years. There you go.
Yeah,
it's become a thing. It's a tradition. It's a yearly tradition.
It is. I don't think we're being pretentious by calling it a tradition at this point. 10 years constitutes that. Probably even a shorter period of time would constitute that. But we always go through. We take a look at all the things from the night. Some of the most colorful things generally are what precedes the event itself. The red carpet, although, as I remarked to you off here, you had diagnosed this, I think, successfully on the show a couple of years ago, that some of the other awards shows we've done, whether it be the Emmys or the MTV Music Awards, that, and I think we did some years where we covered both of those in relatively quick succession, but those are the ones where you're going to get the furthest out, wackiest kind of costumes. This one here, a little more formal, a little more staid, a little more kind of reserved, generally speaking. Now, it's our job here in doing this to find the exceptions to the rule, and there were at least a couple of them, relatively speaking, but, you know, there wasn't anybody out there dressed as an ostrich or anything like that, like we've seen in the past. No Ashley Graham getting described by a red carpet denizen as looking like a blood sausage being stuffed into a casing. Nothing nearly that colorful this time around, but we do have some fun ones here, John.
There are. Yeah, I mean, the Oscars, a lot of times they may be impractical dresses in the sense of, like, they're obviously costumish in the sense of, like, they're going to be noticed. It's not going to be worn by somebody that doesn't want to be noticed. But you're also, these are not things that you're going to see at a regular event necessarily. Well, but they're also nowhere near the level of outlandishness that you'll see at the MTV Movie Awards, the Grammys, or anything like that.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's a trickle-down effect here as far as the material itself not being as colorful. Maybe this may not be some of my best material as far as coming up with amusing commentary. So be kind, listeners. Grade me on the curve because there wasn't anything as outrageous that I found this year. But the couple notes that I found, Ryan Gosling, a Gucci suit that looked like the top part was modified from a hoodie. That was just my weird kind of sense looking at it.
And also, all the guys, they all got the memo, no tie.
Yeah.
No tie. Nobody will wear a tie. We're all going to be showing the man cleavage, and it's ready to go. And the ladies were more like, they were like different groupings. You have like shimmer, structure, and silhouette.
Right.
You have the ones in the shimmer, which were like the shiny dresses. Like, I think Zendaya had a beautiful dress. Margot Robbie was like a shimmery type dress. And then, of course, like with structure, you have, I mean, I saw a lot of really, really, some people were saying it fits odd. It's an unusual dress, but like people that were into fashion loved Emily Blunt's dress. And they were talking about that was all about the structure.
Yes.
Just like Florence Pugh and some other ones there. And another one with structure, of course, was Ariana Grande. Looked like bubble yum had just exploded. It was just like a massive wad of bubble yum that just exploded across the universe in a beautiful way.
Yes.
And then Silhouette are the ones that were in like some sort of black dress that cast a really beautiful like silhouette. Like I think Lily Gladstone had a black dress on, if I'm remembering correctly, from Killers of the Flower Moon. She was, by the way, that's one of the only movies I got a chance to see that was up for an Oscar. That was a very long movie.
Okay.
But she was excellent. She was excellent. Carey Mulligan, I thought, was a standout, by the way. Carey Mulligan had a really, really cool, like, going back to channeling back old Hollywood glam,
yes,
like Audrey Hepburnish type of dress, you know, which, as I think you pointed out off mic, was very impractical with the black on the top and the white on the bottom.
Yeah.
It will collect all the dirt. But for the pictures that she did in the beginning, I thought it was amazing, and it also fit her really great. So that was another one that was, you know, really, really nice with a silhouette.
Well, Carey Mulligan, and you know, as you pointed out, it was the way that it fit her, and it was very flattering. And I hadn't thought of this before, but your comparison to Audrey Hepburn is well taken, I believe, because it would probably look similar on her if we're talking frames. It's probably apples to apples on that. And that's a thing where I do have to say in this day and age that you get into a little bit of what I think is the, I don't know if you call it reverse body shaming or whatever, but some of these fit gals that can be very lithe, a lot of times you get people like, oh, you're presenting an unrealistic standard for young women. So I hope she didn't catch too much flack for looking like she did, because I thought she looked phenomenal.
I don't think anybody, I mean, looking from a leanness aspect, Zendaya looked exceedingly lean and like very, very svelte, and in a dress that was, you know, you had to be to pull that one off. I mean, but she looked amazing, I thought.
Exactly. But these reverse body shamers want to sort of conflate any kind of leanness with anorexia, and that's just out of bounds, I think.
As long as you're healthy, as I've always said from day one,
yeah,
as long as you're healthy, if you're healthy and happy, whatever your body shape is, you're already 99% ahead of everyone else in the world, because there's so many people that other people would consider physically stunning that,
yes,
are absolutely miserable. And there's some other people that people would consider physically a mess and are super happy and just enjoying life. So happiness is really the key. It's not only the new success, it's always been success. People just never really talked about it. But as long as you're healthy, you're not in a medical danger point, and you are happy, I don't care what your body looks like, you're already ahead of 99% of the population.
Well, those are excellent thoughts from the World Authority on Six-Pack Abs, to be sure. So, I think.
And also to channel another one of my lives and iterations, the other trend of the night, especially with the ladies' dresses, was aquamarine, picking a jewel from JB's Fantastic Finds. Aquamarine, you have a lot of the ladies going for that like seafoam, like pale blue,
mm-hmm,
aquamarine color, which was very, very popular. Emma Stone has that. You have the best supporting actress from the another movie I didn't see, but I want to see actually because I heard so much about it, from The Holdovers, Joy Randolph.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had also Lupita Nyong'o, who always, you know, slays on the red carpet, going,
right,
with that aquamarine pale blue color.
I like that a lot, and not just because I'm a Miami Dolphins fan and that happens to be the colors there, but I've always liked that as a type of shade, certainly. And I had an additional thought here. You mentioned Ariana Grande. My note for her, looks like her car airbags went off and they put fabric on them to blend in with her dress. That's what it looked like.
That's good. I immediately thought of, because I'm a big gum person, I immediately thought of Bubble Yum and Bubblicious from back in the day.
Yeah.
The shocking hot pink. And especially when you put, you know, you just put too much in your mouth. You put so much in your mouth, you can barely chew it.
Yes.
And then by the time you spit it out, it's all sorts of, like, concoctions and all sorts of shapes.
Mm-hmm.
That reminded me of, like, that's just the Bubble Yum and Bubblicious come to life in a dress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was what...
Not that it's a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly. We're all thinking the same thing when we see that dress, whether it be that or the placement of balloons underneath the dress or whatever. But it was just a thing where It was very avant-garde, I guess you could say. And that's a term, again, that you don't use it a whole lot for the Oscars. Like, for example, you mentioned here, you mentioned Emily Blunt, and you also mentioned most men weren't wearing ties. John Krasinski didn't get the memo because he was wearing a bow tie. But I looked at the picture of them, and my only thought was, and I've certainly had funnier ones than this, did prom season come early? Because that's what they looked like. It was like, let's just act like we're going to prom here. I don't even mean that as a criticism, but just an observation. They looked like...
Well, I'll give you that one on John Krasinski.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at the picture now of John Krasinski with the Oscar behind him, and that definitely looks like I'm ready to go to prom. I'm all set. I can't wait to go to the beach afterwards.
That was pretty close to mine, except I will tell you, like, on mine... I had, you talk about that shade of like aqua or whatever. I had the cummerbund in the style of Miami Vice back in the day, because that was the thing. I mean, like you look at me in my tux, and it's a very definitive time and place, John B. style. So
back in the day with tuxes, sometimes the cummerbund, if you were short, if you were like long legged and high waisted, the cummerbund pretty much almost went up to the neck on some of those tuxes. You know, it was just like head, cummerbund, legs.
Yes, that was not the case with me, but it was the hilarious Miami Vice themed thing, which again a state of the time, as it were. The only other note that I had for anybody from the red carpet, I told you I only had a few. Rita Moreno, and I looked at her, and it was like my thought that came to mind was if chaos was a fashion line, because it was just I don't know what was going on there, but she was avant-garde. Good to know you can still be avant-garde when you're pushing three digits in age, huh?
She's fun, though. I mean, she is fun. When people, one thing I love about her, whenever she's interviewed, you know how some people go with like, you know, they'll bring up, you know, some sort of thing to try to throw somebody off their game a little bit, like some sort of, not off-color remark meaning negative, but like using a word they might not think she'd know or using phraseology that might be very current and they might not think she knows. She is sharp as a tack.
Yes.
Always in interviews. I love the fact of how she, you know, comes back. And she also is so even keel about it. You never get a rise out of her. It's just like you'd almost say anything and she'd be ready for it. And that's what I like about her.
Oh, she's a pro's pro, no question about it. And that's where I do appreciate that she injected a little bit of color into this because, again, you know, the things that we mentioned thus far, I don't know if this would have made the top 10 at your average MTV Music Awards as far as outrageousness goes, so... For those who did anything at all that was outside the norm, we have to appreciate that, take our hat off to them. And there were a lot of folks where it was like, okay, you know, that looks really good on them, whatever. But, like, I it doesn't pop out at me in any way. You know what I mean? Like, that was, like, the vast, overwhelming majority. I did my usual scroll through dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of pictures. And I'm like, how are so few of these making an impression on me? You know, it's just kind of weird.
See, the thing is, I think we've also become desensitized to it because,
sure.
I mean, back in the day when it was fresh and new and the first time you see, you're like, okay, well, that's pretty wild. And then when you see MTV at Movie Awards and then when you see the Grammys and stuff like that and, you know, people coming wrapped up in tinfoil, I mean, everything is very, very staid after that with the Oscars. I mean, yes, it is costumey. I mean, if you saw that person walking into ShopRite, everyone's head would turn. They go, what the hell is that?
Right.
However, you know, when they're in that situation and they're in that scenario, it looks apropos. It doesn't look wild.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, and then, of course, in the back of your mind, you've also seen all the other crazy fashions with things. And a lot of times people at the other award shows that may not have, like, let's say, the resume to get the attention or the latest project. Mm-hmm. To get all the eyeballs of the interviews, they're going for the outlandish outfit just so that they can get covered and get some sort of buzz about them.
Right.
And that's not going to happen as much at the Oscars because there's going to be too many things that are going to overshadow it. It's more highbrow and it's more, there's more gravitas to it. And it's almost like, you know, we don't deal with that over here.
Well, and it's the importance of it because, again, when we were talking about this a couple of years ago, when you had that whole fiasco with the wrong picture getting awarded their Best Picture Award. Warren Beatty was a part of that whole thing when they gave him the wrong envelope. And I'm like, that is probably the most famous and important award of any show anywhere globally during the year. It's like it's the main event, if you will, at the Oscars. I always tend to come back to wrestling analogies, but that's the main event there. And when you are when you've won a Best Actor or Best Actress award, you are and it need not even be pro wrestling for this analogy. You could use boxing or MMA, but it's like having been the heavyweight champion of the world. Like that's what that means. If you were Best Actor for the year, if you were Best Actress for the year, you are royalty in your field. So that's the whole thing. You're going to get those three awards alone, whatever happens there and whatever movies tend to do very well, and we're about to get into that. You know, those are the things that are going to make more of a buzz than the red carpet. At the MTV Video Music Awards or something like that, pretty easy to steal the show on the red carpet.
I remember back in the day, Lady Gaga came out in an egg.
Yeah.
They brought her out in an egg, and she got hatched on the red carpet.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything can happen there. At the Oscars, not so much. Although the funny thing is, as I start to segue into the Oscars notes, we get into a costume or lack thereof, because I happen to be, so I'm over the house with my dad the other night, and we're both on our laptops, and he's looking at some news stuff on there. Ah, says that John Cena from your pro wrestling came out on stage nude. So I immediately go to Twitter and I'm looking at the clips there, and allegedly, I guess he might have had a thong on underneath there or whatever, but then there were other people that were like, oh, this is part of the Hollywood satanic hazing ritual, the ritual humiliation. So there were people that were weighing in from that perspective. Everybody had their thoughts about John Cena coming out there in that moment, the way that he was or wasn't, as the case may be.
It got a lot of buzz afterwards. It got a lot of buzz. He's one person who has made a very, very successful transition from, I mean, well, you could be a huge star in wrestling, and I know you follow it very, very closely,
sure.
But a lot of times, and you could be a multimillionaire, huge star in wrestling, but you very rarely see those people crossing over into other mainstream things.
Right.
The Rock has done it, John Cena has done it, and they've done it in big ways, and John Cena is, I guess they both have too, but I mean, John Cena also, when he crossed over into movies, he didn't cross over into starring roles. He started small. And has been in many, many, many movies, and a lot of times just little bit parts here and bit parts there. But he basically, you know, paid his dues as far as that goes, and built a whole separate career. And he looks significantly different in the in a lot of the movies than he does when wrestling, and you see him on commercials and things like that. For the, you know, that they wanted him to like size down a little bit, and even though still be muscular, still be, you know, intimidating, but not be too big. I mean, everybody has an opinion when you go to Hollywood about what you should be and what you should do this, do that. And then, of course, when you make it, you could say screw it to everybody.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But I think he also paid his dues to a large degree, whereas somebody from that field could honestly have come in and said, when they say things to you, screw you. I'm not going to put myself through this again. I already had to do the come up in wrestling. I'm not going to do the come up in another business from scratch. And I think that's a lot of humility, and I think that takes a lot of eating humble pie, and I respect him for that.
Yeah, and it's one of those deals with him. You know, my dad was even remarking on that, because, I mean, he was unfamiliar with John Cena. I'm like, very well built, or however he described him. And it's a thing where when I hear that, I have to laugh. Because, like, I remember, like, back in the day, like, you get desensitized if you watch this as much. The first time I remember somebody remarking on him, having, you know, been a bodybuilder or whatever and being one of these muscle guys, I'm like, really? I'm like, I have to watch next time I'm out there. And, like, he comes out, I'm like, yeah, he is pretty muscular. It's a thing where you watch enough of it. A lot of these guys are muscular to some degree. You watch enough of it, it doesn't even register until somebody points out, or unless somebody's, like, freakishly so. If somebody's an obvious roid case and they got the back knee and the biceps on top of the biceps, obviously you notice that. But I didn't notice John Cena until it was, like, pointed out to me, and I felt like such a blind guy for not having noticed that before. But that was one of the big pop culture events of the evening here. And then as far as the awards go, you've always got a movie or a couple of movies that kind of stand astride a lot of what happens here. So in the Battle of Barbenheimer, you've got Oppenheimer doing the best for the night, Best Picture, Best Actor with Cillian Murphy, Best Supporting Actor, Robert Downey Jr., among others. So it was the moment for this movie. I have yet to watch it.
That was pretty much in every award show, wasn't it? I mean, this season, pretty much. I mean, for Barbie was a huge box office success, but, and it was funny when, I thought it was very funny when Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling got up together and did that little, you know, repartee back and forth about, you know, Barbenheimer and things like that, you know, that which was better and stuff. And then, and she nailed him and said, she goes, yeah, it was a back and forth until like award season. And then it's really sort of gone one way. And then he was talking about, well, you know, the reason why it's called, you know, Barbenheimer, and, you know, Barbie's in the lead and Oppenheimer's taken the back, was because all during the summer when they came out, you know, you were following, you know, you were following on our coattails, because obviously Barbie was a huge moneymaker and big success at the box office. But Oppenheimer won, I mean, they got everything.
Yeah, and that was, I had to laugh at the time. Like, I know it was a thing where it somewhat kind of represented a little bit of, like, that post-COVID moment of, like, people are going out to the movies again, and they're going to go see these together. And it was like, I can't think of two more random movies over the course of any period of time, you know, for people who have, like, that's your double feature that you're going to go and see? Like, I just remember at the time, what a crazy mashup that would have been. Like, you know, it would have been like, you know, if you'd gone and watched the Yul Brynner movie back-to-back with the Bad News Bears back in the day. Like, I can't even imagine these mashups of, like, weird combinations people want to go see, like this double feature here.
That's what was the draw. Right. That's what was the draw. It was, it's not even polar opposites. It's just two different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's totally two different worlds. And I actually saw the Barbie movie. I did not yet see Oppenheimer.
Okay.
But yeah, I do want to, and I notice it's back in the theaters now, as it often, whenever there's a big winner at the Oscars, it always comes back in theaters for two or three runs a day for a while to, you know, just suck that last bit of juice out of the American public for, you know, paying to see another movie, which is great because it's a very smart marketing move. And they get that second life after the Oscars, especially when, you know, people even like myself, that, you know, I like to go to the movies and it's a nice escape. But so there's some you missed during the year, and that was one of them, which was over 3 hours.
Well, the thing that's kind of weird about that is, because I'm always interested in the way that the business models are changing in the entertainment industry, and it's one of these deals where, again, I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but it's been on Peacock since, like, mid-February. I have Peacock. So the notion there, I get, if you're going, right, particularly if you have Peacock, you're going because, like, I want to see it in a theater. I want the theater experience for it. Because for my thing, it's like, if it's free with something that you're subscribing to, the notion that you would then go to the theater is something I find very, very interesting.
Or you could have the Regal app where it's unlimited movies.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. Yeah, I had a friend that dabbled in that for a while. He was going and seeing a lot.
That is something my friends like to give each other. Mm-hmm. That is I have one now too, but that is a very popular gift over here.
Yeah,
the Google app. It's actually very, very. It's actually and once again, then I'll take me to say this, but it's actually very, very economically sound. I mean, it's like something like $22 or $23 a month, and you literally can go anywhere in the country, see as many movies as you want. There's absolutely no limit.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you're going every week, you're more than making, you know, up what you would have paid for movie tickets easily. So, yeah.
Oh, 100%. More than 100%. And it's very, very economically sound. And when you don't know what to get somebody, that's just the best gift.
That is a very interesting one. That really is. Because, yeah, I never even thought about that as a gift for somebody, but you're not wrong about that.
Unfortunately, I can't take credit. I will take credit for it. I'll steal credit for it. But no, other of my friends, a few of them do it. And I'm like, wow, that's a damn good idea. That's why you're my friend, because you're super bright.
Well, yes. Thank you. Well, and per the last conversation we had on the show, number 1716, that I had with Dallas radio veteran Dan McDowell, both of us trotted a line out there. My line was, the good ones borrow, the great ones steal, which I stole from somebody else. And a line that he stole from somebody else and uses is, if you steal from me, you've stolen twice. So there are no original ideas.
There you go.
And you mentioned a moment ago Emma Stone. She wins Best Actress for Poor Things. I had to Google that movie and look at the Wikipedia page.
I saw that
page.
One.
That looked like a trip. That looked like a trip and a half from what I read about it, John.
That was bizarre. That was like being in, it reminded me very much, it was very Monty Python-esque in some ways. you know, back very, very unusual, not only, obviously, and not only a very bizarre premise of having an adult with an adult body with a baby's brain, and then having all the lack of inhibitions and the lack of fear and the lack of social discipline that a baby would have, which was interesting. But just the whole costume design, the whole setting, the lighting, how everything was super bright. It was almost done like Alice in Wonderland through the looking glass, that type of look. And it was interesting. It was really, really interesting. It was very, very bright and just a bizarre, bizarre movie, but interesting.
Well, in reading the plot synopsis on Wikipedia, which about fried my brain, I'm thinking to myself here, I'm flashing back to when I was in journalism school at the Harvard on the Hocking, Ohio University, that if I were doing, I had taken a film review class, and were I doing a film review, never even having seen the movie, I can only imagine that my lead for the article would have been, many words will be used to describe this movie. Linear would not be one of them. Because it was frying my synapses just trying to keep up with all the different twists and turns. So I may go check that out, depending on if it's on one of the multiple streaming services that I have.
It was better than I thought, because, to be honest with you, in our movie theaters over here, it was very much played down. I didn't even see many ads for it. I didn't even realize it was out. You know, it came out with a whimper over here, and it was never really, you know, talking. And I'm like, wondering, is that going to be like a sleeper type of thing? And I thought, like, wow, Emma Stone is in it. And I remember I saw the Emma Stone movie where she was Billie Jean King, and I thought that would get a lot more. Usually her movies get a lot of critical acclaim, and you know, she gets a lot of awards for them, and they also get a lot of buzz. And the Billie Jean one, I remember, and me having a tennis background and stuff, I thought was excellent, excellent. And that got no buzz at all. And then Poor Things, I had the same exact feeling about when I saw it come out over here, because none of the theaters were talking it up, and I didn't see that many commercials for it compared to other movies that were out at the time. And in fact, when I went to see it, I'm like, is that still in the theaters? And then I saw it, I'm like, it's very good, but I could definitely see how that would be up for the Oscars.
Well, the way you're describing it, it feels like it's the very epitome of an art house movie. If it came out,
very much so. But it's fairy tale, and granted, there's some gruesome things that happened during it, but it's very fairy tale esque. It's very much Grimm's fairy tales meets Alice in Wonderland, you know, meets the Mad Hatter type of look.
Yeah,
the bright colors, the over the top scenery, the over the top locations, the over the top storyline, and then also adding in a touch of Frankenstein, obviously.
Yeah, and this is one of these things where, again, and I'm largely unfamiliar with Mr. Murphy, who won the Best Actor, but as far as Emma Stone goes, this is one of these things when you look at the course of her career. If there are actors or actresses where you look at them and you think that they're a best actor or best actress winner in waiting. Like, she kind of felt like that, right? Like, one of these years with one of these parts, she's going to get it. Like, this is, like, the least surprising thing in the history of ever to me, that, like, she wins best actress for something, because she does a great job in all of these complex roles that she gets, and it just was like, it just felt like, she's one of those ones where it just felt like a matter of time till she gets that trophy.
This was her second one, though, isn't it?
Heck, it might be. Maybe that's why I'm thinking that. Maybe I'm the ignoramus that missed the first one. Which actually would be incredibly funny if that were the case. Now I'm going to Wikipedia in real time just to see. Yeah, as I'm saying that that's the case. All right, Poor Things. Let's see. Best Actor. Oh, La La Land. Okay.
Yes, yeah. La La Land. Oh,
She won.
Once again, you must suffer from the same time fluid concept as I do. Because even though I can never tell you the amount of years, I can tell you she's been Hollywood's darling for quite a while.
Exactly.
And I did not get the Susan Lucci vibe from her.
No.
About how, you know, it was like always a nominee, never a winner. So I thought she had won for something else, and I think, you know, she's been up for it before too, or at least there's been a lot of buzz about her with it too.
Okay, and that must put her in some rarefied air, being a 2-time winner. But yeah, we were talking about this off air, the Mandela effect. Like, in my mind, thinking that she hadn't won before, that was an invented memory, because she had won before, and you and I must have talked about it here. So
And lo and behold, even though he wasn't in this movie, it was another time when she was sharing the stage and sharing the spotlight with Ryan Gosling.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And she's a great acting talent. Unsurprising that she would get that. Speaking of unsurprising, In Memoriam, botched yet again. Don't we end up saying this every year?
I feel so bad. Yes, you bring that up all the time. Yes.
But I mean, I'm bringing up it out of respect for the names that should have been on there. I mean,
but that always happens. No matter who you mention in Memoriam, and this is on every show, on any type of memoriam, the big story is who was not mentioned.
Right.
That happens all the time. It's not. It's almost like not what you've done for me. It's what you haven't done for me. That they always look to see who was missing, not worrying about who was there.
Am I like the live version of a Twitter troll for bringing that up and saying they need to
no,
be
not
better?
At all.
Okay.
No, not at all.
I wouldn't be offended if you said yes. I've been called that before.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
All right. Because it just, yeah.
Twitter trolls have no redeeming qualities.
Okay. And I actually have a few if you look hard enough. So, you know, that's what separates us. But
starting with you're not only an FDH dignitary, you're an FDH founder.
Yes. Original dignitary in our parlance. Yes. So, I was on the ground floor in 07. And another noteworthy thing to mention here is that the ratings were up 4% from 2023 with 19.5 million people viewing, the highest of any awards show since the 2020 Oscars. So this is one
that's
where
impressive.
Yeah, because like I'm trying to think back. I don't know if they were down around
it's,
10
it's
or whatever.
It's because of the Ken musical number. That's what it is.
It had to be, but like they hit a pretty vicious trough. I want to say maybe about 2 years ago, because I'm thinking maybe they might have been down around 10 million. Wasn't that the year that it seemed like they did it from that depot station or wherever the heck it was? But there was one year there where it just seemed like it was like everything was kind of off. It was like the worst numbers ever, and people were like, "Oh my God, the Oscars aren't, you know, ratings plunge proof anymore." And like it has bounced back pretty solidly. I mean, to be up from 2023, 4%. In a year where, at a time when it seems like everything year over year is declining, again, whatever they did right in a number of ways.
And also anything that stops the downward spiral, because if I'm not mistaken, the downward spiral was not just 1 year, it was a steady decline.
Yeah.
And then there was bigger and bigger drops.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and to do it with, as I do a little editorializing here, the modern version of Jimmy Kimmel as opposed to the Man Show era Jimmy Kimmel. That seems like a big handicap that was put on them right away, having that guy as the MC. So they did it notwithstanding that. Congratulations, ABC.
Yeah, he stepped in it a little bit with the Robert Downey Jr. jokes, but yeah.
He's on a lot of things, he's really kind of sanitized relative to what he used to be. He's sort of the TV version of Howard Stern in that sense of where people still think of somebody as being edgy even when they've really kind of past that point by in their lives. But, he's going to take his bows for this. And I guess the scoreboard tells the story. The ratings were up and it was successful. Nobody came out of this really bitching and crying about anything. There wasn't like the slap heard around the world. Nobody biffed the biggest award announcement of the year at the end of the show. So relative to some of the Hindenburg moments we've seen over the last couple of years, John, they got nothing to complain about.
No, there was definitely no one. Well, once again, there's always people that say, "Oh, well, because there's no one major takeaway, it's less memorable." Okay, in that regard, but sometimes it's nice not to have that as your memory.
Exactly, you'd rather have it just be all positive if you can. And how's this for a segue? What could be more positive than fantastic finds here? So. Why don't we talk about that a little bit here? I got to give you a chance to talk about that as per always, because of all the projects you've ever done, this is on a short list of the most intriguing ones, and I know it's one that's near and dear to your heart.
It is. To be honest with you, we celebrated our 5-year anniversary. JB's Fantastic Finds started on January 22nd of 2019 when we were part of like those multi-show Facebook channels or groups or whatever you call them on Facebook Watch or Facebook Live. I'm like one show of many. in these groups. And then all of a sudden we broke out on our own in 2021, and then hit the national airwaves with the TV commercials in August, in nationally in August of 2021. And it's, history ever since. And we celebrated our 5-year anniversary on January 22nd of 2024. So amazing. From very meager beginnings, you know, which was started as a little side hustle of something that somebody had told me, you'd be amazing at this and this would be something you'd enjoy. I never thought I'd be hunting for treasures but the most important thing and be good at it. But also the best thing about the show is the excitement that the people get. It's the treasures, the little trinkets they get on the show are like the tangible manifestation of the joy they have at the show. As articles have been written on us about being destination programming, and they've had a lot of papers and magazines interview different viewers of the show. Some of the things they say, it's just really awe-inspiring because they really just, I mean, that crazy ass little show, they just look so forward to and find so much enjoyment of being with people, and the conversations they have in the chat, the back and forth, the getting, you know, and the friendships that are made there, dwarf even the, you know, bling that they get.
Yeah.
Which is substantial because the jewels, and I've had to learn, I mean, I had a little bit of background in rocks and minerals from collecting them as a kid, but I had to get really good at knowing, you know, different things about various gemstones and minerals and sterling silver and having to test everything and all this other good stuff, which has been very much a learning experience, but also something I do not hate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know if it were me in that position, I wouldn't miss a chance to mug of like, these are some very righteous gemstones. See what I did there? But I'm sure you're better at keeping that kind of stuff to a minimum than I would be. But yes, people are loving it. People are having such fun. And like you said, a real sense of community with the show. And I keep really, really, really wanting to see one of those commercials on the TV. But you know who has seen them? My dad. Hey, Richard, I saw your friend's show. I saw his commercial on there. So I've heard it reported back to
you
me.
You haven't seen one yet? I'm shocked.
Can you tell me like what networks are more likely to cover?
Yeah, well they have. Well, first of all, it's funny because at the show, whenever there's new people at the show, I'm like, oh, if you could just write in your city and state and what channel you saw the show on, whether it be any of the news stations or on all the news stations, totally non-political. Because if you ever want to do just two stations, you do the two biggest opposing news stations, because then you get, you know, two diametrically. There's no crossover in anything, and you get the most bang for your buck and the you know, the most amount of eyeballs on you.
Okay.
But we do the various news stations, History, Hallmark, HGTV, the H's right there, Discovery, the Learning Channel, ESPN, TNT, Bravo, which is my assistant on the show's favorite channel.
Okay.
It's funny, whenever everybody says, oh, I don't remember the channel, I just see it all the time, like your dad said, she just writes down Bravo, which is not accurate. But all those different channels, TNT, as I said, ESPN, History is a big one for the show. A lot of people seeing it on History, Discovery, TLC, Lifetime.
Okay.
Another one. Lifetime's another one that's very, very popular. A lot of the, there's both men and women skewed channels, but those are pretty much the biggest ones we have.
Okay. Well, people should definitely be looking forward to seeing that out there, because it'll tell more about the show. And, of course, JB's Fantastic Finds right there on Facebook. You've got your group there that people can join and be part of your really awesome community, John.
It has become very much that, which is something you don't expect. Because when I got started with it, I'm like, oh, I have to learn about gemstones. I have to learn about this. I never really thought it would be people like, I think, if you go to like the JB's Fantastic Finds site on Facebook, like you become a member of the group or whatever, and the channel, I mean, when you scroll down the posts, I mean, the vast majority of posts, probably like 80% of the posts, are people posting pictures of their treasures that they get on the show.
Yeah.
And they show so much creativity. You couldn't pay these people enough to put in the time and effort to create the pictures that they're doing. You see backdrops to the pictures. You see other things added to create a scene or some sort of theme or motif of with the treasures. They put a lot of effort into it. And you also then see the other people who are regulars on the show commenting on their pictures and going back and forth. And that's the whole community aspect. And I think a lot of times they get the type of recognition and they get the type of appreciation for their work and they get the type of, you know, respect and just pure joy and love that they may not get in other areas of their life. That's just what I seem to get from it. And I think that's great that I could be part of that, because that's something that I never expected to come from a crazy treasure hunting show that has trinkets and treasures and little figurines and statues and trinket boxes and all sorts of sterling silver gemstone jewelry, you know, it's transcended way, way beyond that. And if it was just the tangible things, it would never have reached the success that it has to this point. And it would never be as interesting to me as it is to this point, because seeing the people get so excited about it, and even seeing some of the things like when somebody's writing an article on us or something, they'll ask for names of people that they can contact. They're not like, you know, you're not coaching these people in what to say, and you're not, you know, saying, oh, you don't know which one the reporter's going to call if you give them three or four,
sure,
or whatever, or five or six. And when I see the quotes that these people give, you couldn't pay them enough to say the things they're saying about the show. I couldn't even think of the things. They're so hyperbolic. They're beyond what I would even think of them having them say.
That's where, you know, you really got something great when you have people that are motivated in that way to promote it as they are. And this is one of these things where the way you're describing it, it almost sounds like people are sort of creating their own art form. One might perhaps call them maybe earnest memes, but that's what it almost kind
of
sounds like.
No, there are tons of memes, even like of talking about little gems. I mean, there's a stone called Larimar.
Mm-hmm.
Larimar is a rare form of blue pectolite found only in the Dominican Republic. It's a stone, in real, give the gem more of a lot of stones. It's a stone that's beautiful blue. It has waves in it. It's almost like reminiscent or reminds you of like a balmy Caribbean sky or a tranquil Caribbean sea. And it's believed to be tied to calmness, tranquility, serenity. It's called dolphin stone, Tophelia stone, Atlantis stone, all these other things. But there was one person who would pronounce it, that we saw somebody pronounce it, always pronounce it Larimar, like your friend Larimar from the gym. Okay, I'm going to go see my friend Larimar. So I started like doing that on the show, and now they create all these memes about Larimar. They go, Larimar has a wife who doesn't work and eats bonbons in her bathroom. Larimar. And they created this whole thing. And this, and if you come to the show and you're new, the new people are like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I mean, because you can have some gemologists coming to our show. And what's really nice is I get a lot of respect, because I mean, a lot of people that have a background in stone, they go, wow, you really know a lot. And they'll say nice things, which is really cool. But you know that they're thinking when somebody's all of a sudden, I go, and now we're showing this Larimar piece. And then you see somebody write in the comments, Larimar bought a ticket to the ball game, but lost it on his way home. Larimar. And spelling it instead of L-A-R-I-M-A-R, how the stone is spelled, they spelled L-A-R-R-Y, new word and new name, M-A-R, like last name Mar. So it's like, my friend Larimar at the gym, I had drinks with Larimar. So, and then the thing is, they become their own, it becomes their own memes. I mean, when we tag, like there's a thing you can do, like when you tag, when you have a show coming out, you do this thing, you do an at everyone, okay? It's like, mm-hmm. It at everyone. My assistant does it, okay? At everyone. And that means that everyone's notified that there's a show starting or something like that. Everyone in the group is notified that there's a show starting. Well, anyway, it's she calls it poking the bear. It's uh-huh. Okay, time to poke the bear. And so people have now sent in, like, stuffed bears, stone bears to the show, that when somebody tags at everyone, I have to, like, take my ring sizer, which I use as a wand almost, and I'm, like, poking a bear.
Okay.
You know? These things have taken on their own life.
Yeah.
You know, with the people that are regulars on the show, which is now hundreds and hundreds of people. So it's just, and even though some people may not come to every show, and then there are other people that come to every show, they may not buy it every show, they may not win something, but they're literally watching for hours on the show and commenting for hours, not buying a damn thing. So it's something that's obviously transcended beyond just getting this trinket or that treasure. I mean, one article combined called this, they said, the show is sort of a combination of stand-up comedy, talk show, and home shopping.
Yes.
And I highly support that. I highly support that description.
Well, listen, some of the best things and some of the most successful things out there are the ones that are basically a hybrid of different formats or ideas, because, and we talked about this before, we talked about like stealing from each other, right? There are so few original ideas in the world. But yeah, the way that you get something like what you did there is you start with, you know, the auction element is at its core, and you slap on some of this and some of that, and that's how you make it unique, and that's how you make it something people gravitate to in this way. You just have to have your own, you know, you have the proprietary blend of what kind of a show it is, of these different elements.
Yeah, it's funny, because when I start the show, I always say, JB's Fantastic Finds, the wildest ride of programming you will find anywhere, on the interwebs, TV, or wherever you consume your media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it, basically. And that's a great way to describe it. And again, it is an awful lot of fun. People should go check that out. And John, it is always an awful lot of fun breaking down the Oscars with you every year. You are one of the busiest people I know with all your different ventures that you have. Always very, very grateful that you carve out the time to come in here and chat with us. Thank you so much, as per always, John Bastow.
You are a buddy. And as I say, in all the accolades you always say about me, FDH dignitary, it stands alone.
I appreciate that. You are one of the greats, one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, the great John Bastow. And John, always a pleasure, and I always look forward to the chance to get you back on here. Thank you so much, and thank you everybody for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1717.